Glowworm by Alison Greaves. Chapter 8. Jill. Content warning. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is discussed in this chapter. Viv wakes when Tara walks in. Sleepily, she props herself up on her elbows, remembering too late that the habit, automatic and unthinking since she was a child, is one of those things she's never managed to train out of herself. It leaves her with pain in her shoulders for the rest of the day. But there's nothing, not even a twinge, some remnant of Gemma in her system, perhaps, or her body getting to start fresh from scratch. Incredible. Tara grins at her, waves with her fingers and starts quietly picking up beanbags and sorting through piles of clothes. She finally finds her phone in the middle of Zoe's scattered makeup boxes and holds it up triumphantly. Good morning, Viv mouths. Another wave and Tara's closing the door silently behind her. Viv turns over. Last night Gemma practically crawled off the mattress trying to give Viv some space and had to be told to stop being silly or to at least leave the duvet behind. But now she's lying facing her, having rolled back towards the middle of the bed during the night. Gemma's hands are curled in front of her and she's biting her lip with slightly extended fangs. There's a trickle of blood from her mouth to the pillow. Viv wipes it up with a finger, impulsively licks it. There's none of the rush from last night. Gemma, radiant and beautiful, but sad and distant. Viv, flying. But it warms her tongue and makes the muscles in her face quiver a little. Gemma's frowning, like she's having a bad dream, so Viv reaches out and puts her hand around one of Gemma's to insert a little comfort into the nightmare. Strokes her wrist with a thumb, lets her eyes wander. Gemma's nothing if not nice to look at, especially when she's asleep and almost still. She's got a tattoo on her right shoulder. Viv squints, trying to get a better look without moving again and potentially disturbing her. It says in cursive, Amanda, and there's a pattern of daisies underneath. Her sister. Oh, Gemma. She's woken by Amelia in the end, about an hour later.
Mum says if you want cooked breakfast, be downstairs in 10 minutes. There's going to be bacon and fake bacon and Tara will eat all the good stuff if you aren't quick.
Viv carefully untangles her hand from Gemma's and tucks it behind her head. For a few seconds she holds out hope that Amelia didn't see anything, but the girl winks theatrically at her. Great. She tries not to blush. Embarrassing. Gemma moans, finally stirring, stretching, yawning, a great big open-mouthed yawn. She explores her front teeth with her tongue, frowns, and retracts her fangs with an irritated look. Viv watches, fascinated, as the small cut on her lip closes.
What's the time?
Gemma asks, wrinkling her nose. 9, Viv says.
Morning, Aunt Gemma,
Amelia says with far too much satisfaction.
Bacon is imminent. Don't worry about the pillowcase, just put it in the basket. What?
Gemma says and realises.
Shit, sorry. Zoe does it too.
How are you feeling?
Gemma asks Viv when Amelia's closed the door behind her.
Any lingering effects from last night?
I don't think so, Viv says, standing, stretching. No real pain, which is novel.
Good. Next time, if you ask for it again, I won't force it on you. I'll know to give you less.
Oh, Viv says, teasing, but the blood high was fun.
No bacon for you if you keep that up.
Viv, feeling slightly giddy and not entirely sure why, sticks her tongue out. Gemma smiles and gets out of bed, moving once more with the too quick motion Viv's not entirely used to, and retrieves her dressing gown. She looks, Viv has to admit, unfairly magnificent in her sports bra and shorts.
You want a shower?
Gemma says. No, I'm still good. I could do with washing my face, though.
You can come with if you want,
Gemma says. She's facing away from Viv, but her face is visible in the makeup mirror and she looks worried.
Just don't look behind the shower curtain.
Gemma rounds the bed. As she walks past, Viv puts out a hand to stop her. Closes her fingers around Gemma's wrist. I can wash after breakfast. It's fine, really.
If you're not comfortable...
It's not that. I just don't want you to be uncomfortable.
Thanks.
She looks at the floor.
Instinctively, I want to shut that door and padlock it. Maybe add some iron bars and a big, spiked pit. But I've been thinking, my boundaries are about a mile wide and I'm sick of it. I want to be more...
She waves her free hand.
More normal? So come with, if you want.
I do. Viv runs her hand up Gemma's arm and squeezes her shoulder. It's the one with the tattoo.
Now go shower. I'll be in a sec.
Gemma smiles and closes the bathroom door behind her. When Viv hears the sound of water, she very quickly lets out the breath she'd been holding. Look after her, huh? Her fingers are still tingling.
Please leave me alone until midday at the very earliest.
Gemma says, face down on the kitchen table and slightly muffled.
Poor Aunt Gemma.
Zoe says, leaning chin on elbow and smirking.
Trouble waking up? Just be glad Mum sent me to wake you and not her.
Amelia says.
I have firecrackers. Thank you, Eleanor.
Gemma says. Ellen nods courteously and, with a finger around each mug handle, deposits 6 coffees on the table.
The blue ones are for you and Tara, she says to Viv. The red ones are for us. Don't get them mixed up. Ours have blood in.
Meals in the Cox house seem to happen exclusively in the kitchen. Viv was briefly shown a dining room during yesterday's house tour, but it's dark and cramped and looks out onto the street. It's presumably only fitted out in case humans... other humans, ones who aren't in the know, happen to pop around for a quick Sunday roast, but the kitchen is at the back of the house, with floor-to-ceiling windows and a glass patio door facing out into the large, tree-lined garden. It's light, airy, homely in a home counties sort of way, and private enough that no one can possibly notice the red mugs, the ones with coffee and blood in them. There's an Arga, too, right out of the posh house catalogue. Viv slurps her coffee.
Do you all just put blood in everything?
She quietly asks Gemma, as Eleanor performs more feats of vampiric dexterity with a pan full of eggs, another of bacon and another of tofu bacon.
Think of it like vampire MSG,
Gemma says and drains her mug.
All-purpose flavour in answer. And, you know, we do kind of need it to live. And having it in our coffee or in normal food or even just in a glass, it feels more human than sneaking into the woods and burying a dozen rabbits.
That's fair. What does it taste like to you? It tastes like pennies to me.
Viv can't hold on to her blush as she realises she's just admitted to the whole table she's had Gemma's blood, but none of them comment. Gemma shrugs and holds up her plate to accept bacon and eggs from Eleanor. Viv calms herself enough to smile at the contradiction. Vegan bacon on the plate, blood in the coffee.
You know how different kinds of meat all taste different, Gemma says. But they're all still meat. Like you try an unfamiliar animal and you know it's meat just from the taste. It's the same with blood. All I can tell you is blood tastes like blood, just not like pennies.
Bacon?
Viv asks, grinning, gesturing with her mug at Gemma's plate.
Pigs are cute.
Breakfast in the Cox's kitchen is almost otherworldly. The warm morning air, the light breeze through the half-open patio door, the happy family, minus Paul at work already, chatting about nothing as they collectively wake up. Perhaps it's the continued reassurance that, for all their fearsome strength and extremely sharp teeth and practically hallucinogenic blood, the vampires around the table are human enough to yawn and stretch and have to wipe crusty bits of sleep out of their eyes. Perhaps it's just because it all reminds Viv so clearly at sleeping over at her friends' houses as a teenager, before adulthood, before rent, before bills, before her pain was more than a twinge, waking up together to face no particular responsibilities, no particular worries, and stacked plates of whatever they could find in the fridge all fried up together. Viv hasn't been so relaxed in a very long time. She showers after breakfast, hadn't planned on it, but the forecast said it's going to be another hot day and she'd rather start with a clean slate. She leaves the door to the ensuite open and is gratified when Gemma wanders in to clean her teeth.
Boundaries a mile wide, but if she wants to try and drop them, maybe that's how Viv can help. Viv takes a while in the shower. Being able to wash her back without having first to consult her shoulders and elbows is another interesting novelty, one she makes the most of. By the time she's done, Gemma's changed out of the dressing gown she wore to breakfast and into proper clothes. Shorts, a tank top, Viv's detecting a pattern, and an oversized red checked shirt. She's running what looks like, but can't be, an epilator over her face and jumps when she realises Viv's come back to the room. "What's that?" Viv asks, remembering to tie her own gown closed before she accidentally flashes a vampire and starts sorting through her clothes.
"Oh," Gemma says, cheeks reddening. "I thought you'd be another minute or so. It's an epilator."
"For your face? Isn't that bad for you?" Viv used to use one on her legs until it broke under the sheer quantity of hair she's capable of growing, and she could actually do with shaving her legs again, she realises, rubbing her calves together. Keeping her legs shaved is the one part of her beauty routine she hasn't let fall away because, goddammit, she's still more than her disability. But the idea that someone might use one where subsequent ingrowing hairs would be both highly visible and highly annoying is a little alarming. She realises she's being slow at the same moment that Gemma shrugs. Of course, vampire. They probably don't get ingrowing hairs.
"I never got to finish electrolysis," Gemma says, "and I hate shaving. This keeps it away for a month, 6 weeks, unless I get really knocked about or starved and my body resets. I know, it's gross."
"It's not gross," Viv says, smiling, trying to radiate reassurance. "It's just unexpected."
"Thanks."
Viv picks out a pair of loose cotton trousers and a top with alternating red and white stripes. "We have plans today." Another shrug.
"Not really. Not much to report yet," Eleanor says. "Benjamin's nervous, so he's moving out from the London office, but he always gets nervous sometimes. I'm not putting much stock in it. No news on Cooper. He might have gone to ground. We don't know. Oh, and Eleanor says you can switch on your phone again, your original phone. No calls, but you can text, if you don't say where you are or who you're with."
"Oh," Viv says. Thanks. She'd completely forgotten about the people in her life who might be concerned about her disappearance. She waits for Gemma to go downstairs and quickly rummages around for her bag. When she switches her phone back on, it immediately fills up with notifications and her heart sinks. 22 missed calls. Viv takes a deep breath, clears them off the screen, and then opens the text from Jill. "Jill, sorry for the no-show. Collapsed. Couldn't make it to bed. Dad's here. It's bad. But you guessed that already because I called my fucking dad. I'll text when I'm up and about again." Jill. "Hope you had an okay evening, V. Dad's making me watch army movies. They're all so brave. It's sickening." Jill. "In hospital. It's not COVID. They've put a plastic face thing on me so I don't get COVID." Jill. "Still in hospital. What's up, V?" Jill. "Hello?" Jill. "V, where are you?" Jill. "Viv. With 4 question marks. Jill. "Vivian. With 6 question marks. Viv puts a hand on her heart, counts to 10 and opens the text from Matt. They start chatty but end with him reassuring himself via text messages that Viv's just sleeping off a mild case of the Rona. Shit. Matt thinks Viv's got COVID. What if he tries to visit her at home? It would be a very dumb thing to do, which almost guarantees he's going to try it. Quickly, Viv replies, hoping to reassure him. "Matt, I'm okay. It's not that bad so far. I'm getting a lot of rest and my friend is helping me." "Rest in bed?" "Yes." "It must be someone else's bed then, because I'm at your house and you're not here. And I think someone's robbed you. I'm calling the police." "No. Matt. Do not call the police. Please. and stop trying to call me. I can't pick up where I am. What's going on? Can you keep a secret like your life depends on it? Yes. Okay, I'm coming back to town, just for the morning, to see someone. Can you meet me around lunchtime? I'll tell you everything in person. That was a stupid thing to promise. Going back with Cooper unaccounted for is about the most dangerous thing Viv can think of to do right now. But her mind made itself up without intervention from her common sense as soon as she read Jill's texts. Viv has to see her, has to know what's wrong, has to make up for disappearing on her, for forgetting about her. Cooper? Cooper can choke on Viv's bones if he finds her. You're not even in town? Where are you? Like I said, I'll tell you everything in person. I don't like this, Vivian. Just tell me if you want to meet up. Yes. Good. I'll text you the details in a few minutes. Viv throws the phone on the bed. Fucking Matt. It's nice that he cares, but why? Just this once, can't he be a normal ex-boyfriend and fuck off? She shouldn't have promised to tell him everything because there's no way she can. Sod it. Work it out on the way. She falls hard onto the mattress, willing it to hurt, for it to be a step beyond what her healed body can take without issue. But nothing happens. She's completely and totally fine. Suddenly she wants to go outside, find an able-bodied person going carefree about their day and kick them to death. This is what you people can do? Just carelessly flop about all the time and never have to worry about it? And then act as if Viv is the bitch for asking very nicely for the occasional accommodation, like, please don't kick my cane. Forget vampires, ableds are worse. At least vampires have superpowers as an excuse. Viv doesn't hurt at all and resents it as powerfully as she ever resented her pain. She imagines Jill in a hospital bed, unable to move the way Viv can now, hooked up to machines. It's not COVID, she said. So what is it? She picks up her phone again. Jill, I'm sorry. I lost my phone. Which hospital? I'll come this morning. She curses her inability to tell Jill she cares, to be anything more than blunt, but her every attempt to type it out ends in frustrated deletion. It's not like she's had much success telling her in person either. The two of them have kept up an emotional grudge match almost the entire time they've known each other. Easier to show affection with careful physical gestures than with raw emotion. Too painful. Jill replies eventually. She's in the bigger hospital on the outskirts of town. Nowhere close to work, home, or Gemma's hole in the ground. In fact, if Viv's home and Gemma's squat are 2 points on a compass, Jill's hospital is a third point almost as far from them as it's possible to be. Even if Cooper's lurking somewhere, waiting for her to come back, the hospital is almost definitely safe. For a moment, Viv's obscurely disappointed. She almost wants to encounter him in broad daylight, surrounded by people and made safe by their presence, and rub her life in his face. Missed, fucker. Most likely he's not even waiting for her. She could have gone anywhere as far as he knows. Why wait around where Gemma, Helena and company know he's likely to be and give them more opportunities to collect information on him and stab him? Viv rubs her ribcage through her chest, between her breasts. Habit. Normally the cartilage there tightens in the mornings, restricting her breathing and her movement. But today there's nothing to soothe, stripped of coping mechanisms by her absurdly healthy body. She throws the two phones in her bag, kicks open the bedroom door, takes a deep breath, and prepares to lie to everyone. It's easy to get away. Gemma's back in the kitchen, sipping blood and typing on her laptop, catching up with people on what looks like a consensus server. And the girls have been banished to their separate bedrooms to catch up on the homework they didn't do yesterday. Eleanor is only too happy to tell Viv it's safe to go for a walk around the neighbourhood.
Just take a mask from the box in the porch,
she says, gently tucking a strand of Viv's hair behind her ear and shooing her out of the kitchen. Viv takes two, yells that she'll be back in an hour or two, and orders an Uber as soon as she's out of sight of the house.
She leaves her car in the driveway. She'll be far enough away by the time anyone realises she's left town that it won't make sense to chase her. Besides, if Viv pulled out of the driveway in the Corsa and one of them noticed, Gemma could probably catch her on foot. She deflects the driver's chat, tells him she's visiting a friend in hospital, which is enough to make him leave her alone with her thoughts. She still can't put her finger on why she recoiled from the idea of asking Gemma to accompany her, except that, for reasons she's scared to examine, she wants to keep Jill and Gemma ignorant of one another for as long as possible. And hey, if Cooper is somehow lurking around the hospital, then she's only betting her own life on this trip. Gemma and Eleanor and the girls will be 60 miles away and well out of it. As they pull onto the dual carriageway, Viv feels a twinge in her hip and an uncomfortable tightness in her ribs. The pain is coming back. It'd be almost comforting to feel like herself again if it wasn't so bitter. Her tinnitus winds its way back into her ears, making itself known even over the rumble of the tarmac. She plugs into her phone, puts on a playlist, blocks everything out. The last time Gemma's blood faded, she'd been on her way back to her own flat and her second encounter with Cooper. Was she running right into her third? Viv still doesn't think it's likely. From what Helena and Gemma both said, the man's powers are limited to the blood thrall, some minor mental coercion of the sort Helena claimed to be bad at, and being reasonably strong by vampire standards. Clairvoyance isn't on the list. There's as much reason to believe Cooper will be waiting for her on the steps up to the hospital as there is to believe he'd have turned out to be her Uber driver. Viv relaxes a little, pleased with her logic. God, Gemma's blood. The stuff was intense. She felt positively rosy towards the woman when she woke up. A side effect? Can't rule it out. If she's going back to Gemma and the Coxes after today, if they'll have her back after this, she's not going to ask for more. Didn't Gemma say the women Cooper captures spend so much time under thrall it becomes permanent? Best to live with her pain, then, and not become reliant on the easy way out. Besides, Jill's stuck in a hospital bed right now because no one offered her the easy way out, especially not Viv, who skipped town without so much as a text message. Sure, she was instructed not to use her phone, but Helena probably has ways to get in touch, secret vampire lines of communication to exploit. Viv doesn't know because she didn't ask. She turns up her music and tries not to think. Selfishness isn't new to her. Just surviving day to day requires she prioritise her own needs above everyone else's. And while a part of her insists she has to do that because no abled fucker will, the rest of her mourns who she might have been, without the need to become hard and self-reliant and instinctively closed off. And she always seems to hurt the same people. Jill, Viv knew in the bar she was likely having serious problems, but it took her 2 days to even think of her again. And Matt, the boy would, and does, do anything for her, yet Viv treats him with nothing but amused detachment, like a dog who'll come when she calls. Her shoulder starts to ache where the seatbelt presses into it. Out here, away from the fantasy land she's been vacationing in, back in the real world, where the people live who she continually lets down, where every surface is covered in needles, and where nobody is passing around tins of shortbread biscuits, Viv watches the miles pass and tries not to think about anything at all. Vivian Taylor's run off again, because of course she has. She left the car and all the clothes and most of the money and Gemma behind and fucked off back up the road. And the worst thing is, Gemma didn't even realise until Helena called, asking why the hell the woman she's supposed to be keeping an eye on just skipped town. She's gone, back where she came from, back where Cooper probably still is, without saying a word, and if she hadn't taken Helena's phone, none of them would know where she'd gone. What even is she trying to do? Offer herself up to Cooper on a plate in some misguided attempt to save Gemma? Unlikely. Vivian's thawed a little, but the chances of her jumping in front of a bullet, a Cooper, to save Gemma's life are, realistically, nil. Gemma's a vampire, and all of them have seen the micro-expressions that cross Vivian's face when she's around them. Vampires make her uncomfortable. Which would be possible to take as sufficient demonstration of common sense if not for, well, this.
Thanks, Helena. No other news?
None.
Oh, except Benjamin's fully evacuated his staff and he's on his way here. I've cleaned out the supply closet for him.
You're putting your boss in the supply closet? Your sire? Shouldn't you give him the big office in the corner?
First, not on your own life, that one's mine. Second, you know he's going to have all kinds of fun making closet jokes. In these uncertain times, I would like to grant my sire all the pleasures he can grasp.
You're a saint.
I still think you should kill the girl. Helena's voice changes timbre slightly. She's probably left her office to stalk the halls. I like her well enough, but this stunt puts all of you in danger. She's right. Should she fall under Cooper's thrall, Viv will gladly tell him everything. But the idea rankles.
I'm not killing her. We need her.
Perhaps. Be safe, Gemma dear.
Say hi to Benjamin for me.
Gemma looks around, tries to clear her head. She's up in the room they shared last night, and all she can think is, will they ever share it again? 2 suitcases, she counts. 16 colours in the eyeshadow palette. 1 worried reflection. She calls. She's a little surprised Vivian even picks up.
Vivian,
Gemma says, worming a little hole in her palm with her fingernail.
What's going on?
I'm sorry, Gemma, Vivian says. There's no echo. She's outside somewhere.
You don't have to do this, Vivian. You don't have to throw yourself at Cooper. I don't know how you think it will help, but
I'm not.
What?
I'm not throwing myself at Cooper. I'm hoping I don't see him. And I'm not even anywhere near the flat or your place. I'm not anywhere I've been in years. He won't look for me here. Gemma pinches the bridge of her nose, smears it bloody.
Where are you?
Don't come looking for me. I won't be here long.
Then I'll come and drive you back.
I'll be on an Uber again before you can get here.
Vivian!
Seriously, I'll be an hour, max.
Okay, I won't come, but where are you?
Is it okay to say on this line?
If it's not, we're beyond fucked. Yes, it's fine.
The hospital. General, not university. Someone I know got sick. Really sick. And I'm sorry, Gemma, but I just couldn't sit there and know about it and not do something. I have to see her.
Okay, just come back as soon as you can.
I will.
And Vivian, if you're wrong and he catches you, if he makes you tell him about Eleanor and the girls...
He won't.
Don't forget he can coerce you.
He won't find me. And if by some ridiculous chance he shows up here, I'll stab myself with a scalpel or something. I'll jump out of a window. He won't get you and the girls.
Jesus, Vivian.
Yeah. Vivian hangs up first and Gemma has to grab her own wrist to stop herself from breaking the phone against the far wall. The arrogance. The stupidity. Does she even know what Gemma risked to save her? Because here she is, gambling it all on someone. On another woman. Probably a real woman too, says the loudest voice inside her. Instinct keeps her contained, but Gemma needs to hit something really, really hard. She takes the stairs at a near run, calls out,
I'm borrowing the keys to the basement,
and scoops them out of the hall drawer without waiting for an answer. On her way down, she slaps the light switch and, as the fluorescents flicker on and illuminate the training area under the house, she glares around the room until she finds what she's looking for. A pile of concrete blocks in the far corner. She's heard about martial arts masters, how they train by minutely fracturing the bones in their hand over and over so they heal back stronger each time until, eventually, they can shatter a cinder block without injuring themselves. She doesn't know if that's true or not, but it doesn't matter. Gemma took the shortcut, dying, and she can do it with a finger. 4 cinder blocks shatter in one go. She stamps the remains into dust, piles up some more, and goes again. Several minutes later, and with the worst of her frustrations released, Gemma finds herself still overflowing with energy. She drags one of the padded wooden dummies into the middle of the room, anchors it in place, and fetches a rubber knife from a locker. Swipes a few times through the air, feeling the blunt edge create waves of wind. She always liked that sound.
Can I watch?
She tenses, but it's only Tara, settling down on the stairs and watching with interest. Gemma remembers, the kid is learning to fight.
Sure.
Gemma says, voice still wobbly with stress.
Just don't try it yourself for a few years. You look kind of scary, actually,
Tara says.
What's up?
Gemma takes a deep breath, imagines her anger flowing out of her as she exhales. It doesn't really work.
Nothing much,
she says.
I'm just going to pray to every unholy vampire god there is that Vivian comes back safe, and then I am going to effing murder her.
It's okay, we're allowed to swear.
Idiot, forgot about the thrall, didn't you? The man can just hold you down and force feed you and, unlike Gemma, who's practically paralysed by fear over the coercive nature of her own blood, Cooper won't be shy about dumping enough into you to make you his willing servant. You spent the entire journey thinking about Gemma's blood when it should have been his you were worrying about.
God, Gemma. On the phone it seemed like she thought Viv planned to give herself to Cooper for her sake. Maybe to repay her for what she did, but it hadn't crossed Viv's mind at all. Selfish, as usual. Too late to think about that now, Viv's trying not to be obvious about checking every corner for Cooper as she walks through the hospital corridors, but she grows faint every time a nurse walks out of a side room or a ward door bangs open. The general hospital is new and quite spacious, and Viv keeps a clear meter on either side, the better to escape, comical though the idea is in the face of vampire speed. In her hands, she mutilates a triple pack of Jaffa cakes she bought at the hospital shop. A terrible present and an even worse apology. It takes her a few minutes to find Jill's ward. Despite being a recent build, the General Hospital is as confusingly laid out as the Rat's Maze University Hospital in town and the Royal Berkshire back in Reading. But at least here they have air conditioning going, the better to keep the air clean. Just in case, though, Viv supplemented the cloth masks she picked up at the Cox's with a paper one from the shop. Hell, if she gets COVID from this, Gemma's blood can probably treat it, no matter how distasteful Viv finds the idea of losing control again. Jill's ward is a small one, with just 6 beds on each side and an outside wall composed entirely of windows, but Jill, it turns out, isn't benefiting from the view despite her bed being on the end. Her movement is heavily restricted by all the hardware she's hooked up to. She's wearing a plastic face shield, mask and hospital gown, and she frowns as Viv walks up. Viv, guiltily exaggerating her limp and feeling obscenely healthy, wonders if she overdid it. Hi, Viv says quietly so as not to disturb the other patients. She waves the box of Jaffa cakes. And just where the flying fuck have you been? Jill demands at full volume, sitting up fractionally in bed and wincing. There's stubble growing in on her head, veins standing out on her beautiful, gentle hands. I'm sorry. That's not an answer. Give me those. Viv hands over the box and Jill tears it open and devours 2 at once. The food here is revolting, she adds mid-chew. They screwed up my Weetabix. Tasted like old gloves. Why didn't you go to the university hospital? Viv asks, pulling the nasty orange visitor's chair over to the bed and sitting down, uncomfortable. It's full, of course. COVID. Shit. Yeah, of course. You're being careful? Jill gives her a look. What the fuck do you expect me to do? She taps the face shield. Considering I can't fucking move, I'm being about as careful as I can be. Sorry. Where have you been?
I can't tell you.
Jill throws half a Jaffa cake at her. Fuck off then. What? Are you deaf as well as lame? Jill shouts. Fuck off! She's never been like this. Viv's known her to lash out when she's in pain. She likes to draw attention to their shared physical limitations, but she's never raised her voice like this. Of course, Viv's never gone radio silent for days before, especially not when Jill needed her. Even when they fought, they both knew they'd each come running, or the nearest equivalent, if the other one really needed it. Until now, when Viv just up and vanished. She'd had to rely on her bastard dad. And now he's not even here. That makes 2 of us. Okay, Viv says. Okay, I can tell you bits of it. Bits of what? Are you a spy now? Did you go silent on me for reasons of national security? I have a stalker, Viv says, settling on a narrative. At the bar, when I left, he attacked me. He only didn't do what he wanted to do because a friend stepped in and took me home. And then the stalker found me at home, so I've been staying with my friend. Matt? No, someone I met recently. Jill shifts in the bed. The tubes running into her nose and wrist protest every movement with awkward rubber squealing. With her free hand, she massages her temple, and some of the tension leaves her body. I'm sorry, she says, quieter, less clipped. That sounds awful. Not awful like this, Viv says. You want to talk about it? You want to talk about your stalker? Not really. Then yeah, let's talk about my heart.
She's going to die. 6 months, at the outside.
There's an operation, and she's probably going to agree to it, but for people like Jill, it's problematic, and that's without a pandemic that could take her at any moment or simply delay her treatment because the hospitals are getting overwhelmed again. Out in the open air, away from the stink of the critically ill and the stressed to breaking point faces of the hospital staff and the cruel, smiling face of the woman she thinks she might love, Viv rips off her mask, throwing the paper hospital issue aside, not caring where it lands, and fumbling as she tries to secure the fabric mask in a ziplock made slippery by bloody hands. After all, why not punch the wall? Why not strip your knuckles against the concrete? Why not hurt yourself for no reason beyond your own seething contempt? Because you, Vivian Taylor, you can be healed. But Jill can't. Because she can't come back with her. She can't get out of that bed and return with Viv to be healed. And Viv can't tell her about the vampires. Not because she won't be believed, or because she'll be thought ridiculous. Who even cares about that in the face of a life saved? But she tried. She put it on the tip of her tongue and couldn't force it out. And it's not Helena's compulsion. That wasn't remotely broad enough. Viv looked in the face of her dying lover, saw instead the faces of Gemma and Eleanor and the kids, and decided not to tell secrets that aren't hers because other people might get hurt. Do you really love her? If you would choose the safety and security of three children you just met over her, do you really love her? If you would pick Gemma, the monstrous fucking vampire, over her, do you really love her? What do you want, Vivian? If Jill dies, when Jill dies, it will be a complication out of your life, won't it? It'll be easier for you. She's been getting more distant by the week anyway, a little bit less a part of your life all the time. Sure, once you were together more than you weren't, but that's long over, so who is she to you now? Apart from a terrifying reminder of what might happen to you as your own illness progresses. Your love, your future, staring back at you from a hospital bed, clutching your hand with shaking fingers as you lie to her. Viv punches the wall one more time. Cooper might as well have caught her again, held her down, made Viv break herself against him again. She's so defeated. One of the phones in her bag rings. She wipes her knuckles on her trousers and retrieves it. Helena's. She wants to throw it across the road or stamp it to pieces on the ground. Instead, reluctantly, she swipes green.
Vivian?
Gemma says.
Are you still safe?
Viv closes her eyes. She lies to Jill and resents her sickness, hides things from Gemma and risks her safety and that of those she loves. Maybe she should have been left to die after all, left to be turned, taken by Cooper and excised cleanly from her life. It's too messy now, too many people, too many connections. She was better off alone, less dangerous to others.
Vivian!
Yes, she says. I'm safe.
Good. Come back.
The call clicks off. You're fucking everything up, Vivian. Viv sits, not thinking about how hard she hits the step and not caring when it hurts. She's not crying. She's learned not to, but her throat has closed up. Breathing is getting difficult. It's like that when the stress and the guilt overwhelm. Viv's body seizes up, an enforced time out. She massages her chest and wheezes. On the green opposite the hospital entrance, a woman and a man set out a picnic blanket and little chairs and start unpacking food and drinks. Viv wants to kick it all over.
Vivian!
Oh, Jesus, what timing.
Viv forces a breath through her lungs, clenches the muscles in her thighs and calves, loosen up. Nothing's wrong. Everything's fine, Matt. She finds a smile, meets his eyes. He beckons at her, waving off his Uber and points across the street to a cafe with free tables outside. He doesn't comment on Viv's bloody knuckles when she catches up with him because he knows she'll yell at him if he fusses. Precedent. So, he says, when they're sat and served with tea and sandwiches. I'm glad you don't have the Rona, Vivian, but what's going on? Viv chews on her egg and cress, buying time. Start with the truth, work up to the lies. My girlfriend's in the hospital. It's almost satisfying to watch the warring expressions on his face as he decides whether to be ecstatic that she has a girlfriend or dismayed that her girlfriend's sick. She's got something like what I have, only worse. Remember I told you about EDS?
Ehlers-Danlos syndrome,
Matt says, nodding, well coached. He'd cried when she told him. She'd watched, blank-faced, impatient.
It makes you bendy.
Viv smiles a brief, genuine smile. Among other things, but Jill, she's got a variant. It attacks the internal organs, like the heart. And she's young for it to have progressed as far as it has. Viv's throat tightens again and she forces down a sip of tea before continuing. But it's not unknown for someone her age. Very clinical phrasing, Vivian. Picturing her dead already? She bites the inside of her cheek.
How old is she?
Matt asks, painted with concern. 33, 34 in a couple of months if she makes it that long.
Is that bad?
It's that bad.
God, Vivian, I'm so sorry. I wouldn't have hassled you if I'd known. I can keep faking to Rakesh that you've got COVID if you like, if you need the time.
Vivian briefly entertains leaving it at that. She can let him believe she's staying away from work so she can care for her sick girlfriend. And her stomach knots because she knows she's leaving soon with no intention of coming back. But no, he saw her flat. He knows something else is going on. Damn, she'll have to tell him something, but first she needs to fill a gap in her knowledge. Matt, how did Rakesh find out that I have COVID? Fake COVID, I mean. His shoulders relax, like he's happy to accept the change of subject.
A woman comes in, says she's from your doctor, goes straight up to the office to see him.
The office at Beachway is like a prefab on stilts, looking out over cycling. It's only a few years old, dating from when the franchise owner finally conceded that the branch manager needed somewhere more secure to do the accounts than the table in the staff kitchenette, and it's got the nicest kettle in the building. Rakesh likes to have his monthly chats with staff over one of his many teas. The one in the pink box is Viv's favourite.
10 minutes later, she leaves, and he puts up on the board, "You've got the Rona." He wanted to get you flowers, but Charlotte said you'd get hay fever and it wouldn't be a good idea, COVID being a respiratory thing and all. So he's probably going to get you some Quality Street or something. I can look after that for you if you like.
Did she say what her name was?
Not to any of us. Great hair, though.
Viv nods, files it away. Matt, about my flat...
Yeah, I let myself in, and Viv, your telly's gone. Your back window's boarded up.
I know. I was attacked. I'm staying with a friend. She recounts to Matt's worried frown the same stalker story she told Jill, slightly embellished. She wishes she'd thought to record herself so she can keep her story straight. Fuck it. Next time. Viv freezes her face instead of sighing. There probably is going to be a next time. Multiple next times. She hates lying. It has a tendency to get out of control.
What's your plan?
Matt says when she finishes. My friend's kind of freaking out that I came here today, Viv says, so I'm catching a ride back soon, and it might not be safe for me to keep coming back to visit Jill. Can you go see her sometimes? I'll ask her if it's okay.
Of course. Whatever you need.
Viv doesn't ask why he's always so kind. She knows. Small talk carries them through the next 20 minutes. Viv eats the last of her sandwich and confirms via text that Jill doesn't mind if Matt visits her. Hooray! A straight boy slobbering all over me. He's house-trained, don't worry. So he's going to pee in the corner of the room?
Be nice. It took him a long time to learn to do that consistently. V, don't worry about me. Asking the impossible as usual. I'm serious. I've always known it could happen. Been waiting for it. And I didn't warn you because I'm a selfish bitch. I needed to snatch a bit of normal. I'll still worry. Don't. Grieve me when I'm dead, not when I'm still alive, or I will fucking haunt you. I relent. You win. Good. Tell your boy he can come whenever. I'll fix the deficiencies in your training. FYI, he'll do anything for a Jaffa cake, if you haven't thrown all of them on the floor yet. I'll have him eating out of my hand. It's all fine, Viv says, dropping the phone back in her bag. I have to warn you, though, she might not be very nice to you. She can be prickly.
I don't know how I'd ever cope with that,
Matt says, deadpan. Oh, fuck you, Viv says and throws a crust at him.
Hey, watch out. I have a date this afternoon.
Really? Viv says, interested despite herself. What's her name?
Harry, as in Harriet.
When did this start?
Yesterday. Fixed up her Toyota. She's meeting me here, actually, so you might get to see her.
I'd love to stick around, Matt, but my Uber's on its way.
Your loss.
Climbing into the car a few minutes later, Viv sees a woman with long, dark hair walking across the green, waving to Matt. Harry, probably. Good. Viv likes it when Matt dates. He fusses over her a small amount less.
The journey back seems quicker. Viv chats with the driver until they leave town and spends the rest of the journey staring at the scenery, thinking. She can probably ask Gemma when all of this is over to sneak into the hospital and help Jill.
Vampire blood ought to be able to heal a failing heart, and even if it can't make Jill completely healthy, witness the resurgent pain in Jill's overworked joints and muscles, surely it can reset her clock? Viv smiles, imagining Jill sitting up, stretching renewed limbs, filling restored lungs with fresh air, stepping lightly out of bed. Maybe vampires aren't so bad. She revises that opinion when she gets back to the Coxes and Eleanor wordlessly leads her into the kitchen, where Gemma is sitting with a very tall glass of blood looking like an unexploded bomb. Viv sits opposite, nods to Eleanor when she holds up a tin of instant coffee. I'm sorry, Viv says. Look, Gemma says, pinching the bridge of her nose, blood spots on her palms. Shouldn't those have healed already?
I know why you went. A friend in hospital. You can't ignore that, but you shouldn't have gone alone. It's dangerous to...
She's my girlfriend,
Viv says quickly. She still doesn't know why she's kept this from Gemma, but it's time. Her name's Jill. She's disabled like me, but with some extra complications. And those complications are killing her. She tells the whole story, how they met, their first kiss, after Jill shaved her head. Bars, parks, buses and trains, Viv's flat once for a night of Netflix and a day of missed work. Idiotic competitions to see which of them can bend their fingers back the farthest, Jill with a thumb splint, Jill's disability and how it differs from Viv's, how it's the same. And Jill in the hospital bed, weak, angry, and tremblingly alive. It takes two coffees to get through everything, but she keeps going through the caffeine shakes. She has to get it all out before it rots. Someone in her life needs to know everything. Gemma doesn't say much, asks a few questions, stares at the knots in the kitchen table, seems occasionally to be counting under her breath. Eleanor is more responsive, more interested, smiling encouragingly when Viv struggles, and putting a brief hand on her shoulder when she brings the second coffee.
We can probably help her,
Gemma says eventually into the silence after Viv finishes.
A little blood in her IV, not enough for her to dance out of there, but maybe walk, repair the heart. I can ask Helena to send Jackie. She'll stake it out for a couple of days, and if she thinks it's safe, she'll sneak in.
You'd really do that?
Of course. Jackie? Jacqueline Vries, Helena's main assistant.
Viv remembers. Does she, by any chance, have great hair?
incredible hair.
Gemma smiles. It doesn't reach her eyes. Viv nods, a minor mystery solved. She'll think of a way to thank Jackie. I'm sorry, she says. I panicked. I turned on my phone this morning and there were all these texts from Jill about how she's in hospital, wanting to know where I am, and I don't know. I felt selfish, like I've had it too good, like I get to have this fun little holiday and...
A holiday?
Gemma interrupts.
You got violently assaulted twice, and now you're on the run. Just... Please, Vivian, for pity's sake, tell me next time. I can't protect you if you just run off.
I'm not your responsibility.
You are!
Gemma shouts. Her closed fist twitches like she wants to slam it on the table or punch someone's head off.
Do you know what I risked to help you? I was supposed to let you just die. And now you just...
Still looking at the table, she trails off, her mouth still working, like she's counting again, or chewing up her cheek.
Gemma,
Eleanor says with a hand on her arm,
you have every right to be angry, but please try and think of it from Vivian's point of view. I've been hiding from that rat fucker for 20 years,
Gemma says quietly, slowly.
Waiting for the right time to take him down safely. And then I save her, and suddenly...
She counts on her fingers.
One, he knows I'm still alive, which means... Two, he has a huge weapon he can use against me. He can take my little secret to the directors any time he wants, and I have no way of knowing if or when. He's got my fucking genitals in a vice, and the only way I'll know if he's decided it's worth the risk to squeeze is when the enforcers turn up and take me away.
I'm so sorry.
Excellent. Good.
Gemma clenches her fist again, boiling with contained energy.
I don't care.
Please, Gemma, Eleanor says. Understand that this Jill is clearly very special to her. If you'd had someone...
Gemma goes very still. Viv holds her breath, watches as Gemma carefully removes Eleanor's hand from her arm, pushes her chair back, stands, and slowly walks out of the room. Doesn't look back. Moments later, the front door clicks quietly shut.
Biskisian!
Eleanor mutters.
I'm an idiot.
Should we follow her?
Viv asks, unable to stop staring at Gemma's half-finished glass of blood.
I have a basement full of powdered cinder blocks that says that would be a very bad idea.
Eleanor shakes her head, retrieves Gemma's glass, finishes the contents and rinses it, leaving it upside down on the draining board. She washes Viv's mug, sets it down alongside, and she sits down again, taking one of Viv's hands in her own and squeezing it gently.
I have an idea where she's going. Give her an hour to calm down and then we'll find her.
Right.
Vivian, dear, that was a very foolish thing you did today.
I know.
You won't do anything so foolish again?
No.
Good girl.
Eleanor smiles, releases Viv's hand and pats it.
Would you like a snack?
No, thank you. I think I'll just go sit in my room for a while, if that's okay.
Call me if you need me. I'll give the girls the edited highlights.
Viv pauses in the archway that leads to the hall and nods her assent. Where's she going, do you think? Eleanor looks out into the back garden.
I think she's gone to see her sister.